fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the November 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Organizers of next year's rescheduled Tokyo Olympics will have measures in place to limit the spread of COVID-19. But little is known about how the virus affects the long-term health of those already infected, including athletes. South African researchers are leading an international effort looking for answers. Marisa de Klerk reports from Pretoria.
South African Olympic hurdler Venda Nel is grateful to be back on track for next year's rescheduled Tokyo Olympics after recovering from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus.
It was about 2 to 4 weeks that I've took it very slowly with the training, checked my heart rate every training session, just monitor that. And from there, I actually went into full program and I feel stronger, fit, and actually fully recovered right now.
The International Olympic Committee tasked a prominent South African sports physician, Martin Schwellnus, to lead international scientists compiling guidelines for doctors treating athletes recovering from acute respiratory infections, including the coronavirus. The University of Pretoria Sport, Exercise Medicine and Lifestyle Institute, SEMLI, through the IOC Research Center in South Africa, initiated the International AWARE Research Study as part of this work. The project includes data from the COVID-19 Recovery Clinic for athletes. Dr. Schwellnus, who is a professor at the University of Pretoria and the director of SEMLI, says COVID-19 seems to affect various organ systems.
In the returning to sport, it could result in medical complications. And to date, we don't really know what these are for COVID. And so the focus of the project is to investigate what happens in the athlete when they've had COVID and how does the body heal and respond.
The project uses an online survey to gather data from any person training regularly for 3 hours a week who had acute respiratory infections, including COVID-19. Those recovering from the ailment can join the COVID-19 recovery clinic for help returning to sports. Medical doctor and amateur triathlete Marcel Juster joined the clinic after he recovered from COVID-19, which he caught from a patient.
I'm expected to follow a specific return to play protocol in terms of what I'm allowed to do in terms of exercise. That is if I have passed all the testing. And then I am required to give them feedback in terms of how I feel following training.
17, 18, 19, 20. The research examines COVID-19's impact on all organ systems. According to preliminary findings, athletes who've had COVID-19 find low-intensity exercise to be harder and recovery time much longer than from other respiratory infections. Evidence-based guidelines should help recovering athletes to better and more safely prepare for the Tokyo Olympics, says Kelly Miller, rehabilitation specialist at the University of Pretoria's SEMLI.
If an athlete does happen to contract COVID-19, it would be really important and really valuable for the coaches and medical professionals to have evidence-based advice to guide that athlete back to their performance in the shortest time possible.
For Venda Nel and other Olympic athletes recovering from the infection, the research could help them come home from Tokyo as champions. Marisa de Klerk for VOA News, Pretoria, South Africa.
Now let's go to Nigeria, where the Ministry of Youth and Sports Development is urging athletes to follow COVID-19 protocol. Dr. Ari Ademola is the director, grassroots sports development at the ministry. Iron Mike Mbonye asked him, do you have a special message for the country's athletes?
The big message
is that the federal government has lifted ban on contact sports in the country. These are the areas where we have majority of our athletes, both at the developmental stage and at the elite level. So all of them are now aware that the ban has been lifted. They are aware of the COVID protocols. They know the, if you are not playing, you use your mask. If you are not using mask, you must ensure that you maintain social distance and you use sanitizers to ensure that you make yourself safe. So when there is life, there is hope. You must ensure protocol, obey the protocols for team sports so that we can always be alive to do what we know how to do best.
Do you think the lifting of the ban on contact sports will give Nigerian athletes enough time to prepare for Tokyo Olympic Games?
Yes, it will, definitely, because everybody is looking forward to the lifting of this ban, especially for team sports. However, Nigeria is not so good in all these team sports, you know, as per qualifying for the Olympic Games. Probably for in the past, maybe in basketball and in football. And these two teams are aware of the enormous responsibilities on them, and they can be very sure that they will have adequate time. Apart from their local training, most of our players are usually outside the country, and they are training within their capabilities and the limited space they have. So all of them are training, and then lifting of this ban will now enable us to have more cohesion among the team. You know, the players can now practice together, train together, go on training tour, so that we can achieve team spirit, team cohesion, and team play, so that Nigeria will do its utmost best to ensure that Africa is well represented at these games.
How will the Ministry of Youth and Sports Development ensure compliance of COVID-19 protocols? Football clubs and other outdoor events.
This is very simple, because every establishment, any sporting organization, either NGO, ministries or any MDA, are all bound by the decisions of the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19. And we are also complying with the advice from other major health stakeholders like Federal Ministry of Health, the PTF, and others that we know are very relevant to ensure safety of players, officials, and other major stakeholders in sports. And for this, all, for example, in football, the NFF is quite aware, and that is why you see the lukewarm attitude in coming up to ensure that they resume their football activities. They want to ensure that all the club owners, all the clubs in the country abide by the rules and regulations guiding their resumption. And it is very clear that, for example, in football, there will not be spectators. Other officials must use face masks. There should be sanitizers, and they have to comply. It is very necessary. And the ministry is always available to send supervisors to ensure compliance by all these organizations and other stakeholders in football. So it's not going to be too easy, but it is something attainable for us to achieve.
That's Dr. Are Ademola, the director, grassroots sports development at Nigeria's Ministry of Youth and Sports. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Abuja, Nigeria.
Party greetings. I am Dr. Are Ademola, Director of Grassroots Sports Development, Federal Ministry of Youth and Sports, Nigeria. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting 19. Thanks.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Balance. Like to stay on top of music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. What a pleasure. You can get it every week right here on Time in Africa. So join me, local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1520 UTC.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist. Time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and listen to this Sunny Side Sports on Voice of America.
The energetic Andy Edwards has been talking this week with Roger Robinson, an author and scholar whose most recent book is titled When Running Made History. In terms of Roger's own running history, he ran for England and New Zealand at the international level, including the World Cross Country Championships. Roger tells Andy he became fascinated with the event as a teenager.
I learned to the International Cross Country, as that was called, before it became the official IAAF championship, when I won a book in a race when I was about 16 years old. And it was a very tatty, faded, old history of the International Cross Country Union race. And I became completely hooked on it. And that's when I first got my interest in the history of running. And so I've always loved that race. And when time went by and eventually I actually ran in it, that was a dream beyond anything that I thought would ever be possible for me as an ordinary runner, as a young person. I ran eventually for England and New Zealand. And so love that race. I think you've touched on a lot of factors. One, the African dominance. I think that has been made to look much greater than it needs to be. The Western runners gave up. And even now, we look at the quality of running in any Western country, in New Zealand where I am now, or in America where I spend time, or in Britain, there is nothing like the depth of performance that there used to be in our day. It used to be that to get in the New Zealand cross-country team, you would have to be running under 29 minutes for 10,000 meters, say. But we had 15 or 20 people capable of doing that. There's nothing like that now. You know, the national championship for 10,000 meters will be run in 30 and a half minutes or something. So that's one factor, is that the Western countries have lost that depth and the willingness to train. And that's partly the effect of money. In our day, there was no money. We did it because we loved it, because it was really hard to do, and because we wanted to get up to the highest level. In remedies, I think one remedy for this would be, and this move is actually underway now, I think, thanks partly to Sebco, and that is to get cross-country into the Olympic Games. Now, that would have an enormous benefit of really validating cross-country as a sport, and if it was put into the Winter Games, which is a proposal, then it would give access to the Winter Games for the African nations. And your listeners are African, and this is an opportunity which they would really welcome, because for obvious reasons, you know, they're never going to be that great at downhill skiing, you know, or bobsledding or something. But they are great runners, and if running into the Winter Games, then suddenly Africa would have a real place there. The other thing that could happen, you know, I've thought about this for a long time. You mentioned Premier League soccer, but Premier League soccer is not the beginning is not the end of the story. There's a whole structure in soccer where, down through all the different leagues, from international level, from World Cup level and Champions League and so on, and there's a whole structure. And if what should happen in cross country is that it should be divided into divisions. So that, I mean, if Division One was always Kenya and Ethiopia and Eritrea and wherever else, then maybe Great Britain and New Zealand and France could compete for a place in that top division and could get promoted and relegated. I mean, that would be, that's just off the top of my head. There's one way of doing it. The other way is to do it in the Olympics. But the key thing, I think, is to crank up the psychology of Western runners and not just get them to feel that they can beat the Kenyans, if they train harder, they'll run faster. And then there's not nearly enough of them are training hard enough. That's the reality of it.
The idea of having divisions, promotion, relegation, of course, when you look at team sports, so often that's what gets fans going and media interest. Will our local team survive relegation, or will they be promoted to the top flight? And it's a great story, whatever happens. I'll just slip in mention of someone else who I've enjoyed, as with you, talking to and interviewing over the years, Charlie Spedding, the last British man to win an Olympic medal, bronze in the marathon, Los Angeles, 1984. And his book, From Last to First, is like your books sitting behind me on my shelves in my little studio.
I was going to say, Andy, I read it this year for the first time, and it's one of the most engaging, best, most vigorous running books I've ever read. It's just a delight. So, Charlie Spedding, if you're listening, all credit to you.
And Charlie has a very astute mind. And I just pick out, we talk about psychological dominance or what you feel about yourself. There's a section in the book, in fact, he begins with warming up for the Olympic marathon in LA. And he has an attack of, in effect, panic. Well, you and I have both done plenty of exams. I know what that's like. And he has to go outside and just breathe, because inside he sees, and these are the best marathon runners in the world, in theory. There are people, he says, look at, and I think he even says there are two guys from New Zealand. They're running up and down, warming. They're warming up too much. You know, he says there are people who are just expending nervous energy. And I just had to stop and be alone. But real point of mention of Charlie Spedding, he's in the lead group. And as you know, it's 30 or 35K. This is where the final chapter of the marathon is so often unfolded. And he, in his mind and in the book, as you probably remember, he's checking off, he's ticking off the people around him, his opponents, his rivals. And what sticks in my mind, he mentions, oh, there's Nyuma Ikanga, Tanzania, you know, great runner, Boston, this, that, and the other. And Spedding in the book just says, well, I knew I'd beaten him before. Yes. And that's not denigrating Nyuma Ikanga. It's, I've never been near your ability or achievement as a runner, so maybe I've never done it. But you do get that sense of, well, because I've been, you know, toe-to-toe metaphorically with somebody in a race, I've got as good a chance as they have. And I think for various reasons, that's why it's no longer the case. But I think the idea is about the Olympics, that could give fresh incentive.
Yeah, and just on the psychology of it, and Charlie Spedding's book, I'm rather skeptical, I don't know, about old-fashioned or something, but when people say that racing is 90% psychological, I say that's nonsense. Racing is 99%, have you done the work in training? If you do the work, then you can run with it. Then you can start thinking whether you can beat them or not. But until you've cranked out that work, you're not there. And Charlie Spedding is, I mean, his psychology, what's really special about his psychology is not only that he could lift it on the day, but that he was out there in a horrible English northern winter, cranking out his 100 and something miles a week and doing the quality work with Brendan Foster and everything else. It's the long-term psychology that you need, and that's what is so special about our sport. It's not just getting a psychological advisor and visualizing and all that nonsense. I always say this, the only visualization I do is to imagine there's a glass of beer at the finish line. And I don't go through all the nonsense. And the athletes that I coach, they all have these different things, different shoes they wear, different ideas, different mental preparation. And I say, do the work. Full stop. And with the African runners, the reasons for the African dominance, of course, millions of years at altitude is a major factor. The other major factor is they are training harder than anybody else in the world. And when somebody comes through and trains as hard as they do, like Paula Radcliffe, say, or Charlie Spedding that time, they will be up with them. They will be competitive. But that's what it needs.
Well, Roger, it's been lovely to talk with you, me in North London and you in New Zealand. I hope it's not the last time we talk. Fascinating insights. You have thrilled me with a thought, the reminder of that idea of could we have cross-country in the Olympics, and all your thoughts on running and when running made history, your most recent book. Roger Robinson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Andy.
I'm Kendra Harrison. I'm the 100 hurdle world record holder for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. And for our VOA listeners who might be wondering, Larry London is not related to my VOA colleague, Lori London. Larry spells his family name like the British capital, while Lori spells it L-U-N-D-I-N. Well, when it comes to tennis in Paris, we might want to spell it R-A-F-A, Rafa. Rafa Nadal became only the fourth man to reach 1,000 match wins when he rallied to beat fellow Spaniard Feliciano Lopez Wednesday 4-6, 7-6, and 6-4 in the second round of the Paris Masters tournament. Nadal joins Jimmy Connors, Roger Federer, and Yvonne Lendl as the only male players to reach the 1,000 win mark since the Open era began in 1968. Jimmy Connors tops that fabulous foursome with a total of 1,274 match wins. Last month in Paris, Rafa reached another milestone, winning the French Open to tie Federer with 20 major titles, the most for male players. After winning last month at Roland Garros in front of 1,000 fans, Rafa's latest tennis achievement occurred in a nearly empty 20,000-seat arena in Paris because of the coronavirus pandemic. Speaking after his 1,000th career win, Rafa had this to say.
To win 1,000 match, you need to be, you need to have a very long career, but super happy, no? Of course, they arrived to that number means that I did a lot of things well and during a long time, no? So very happy, and thanks to the ATP, to the French Federation, to everybody who make this recognition to me on court have been beautiful. Of course, not the same without the crowd, but at the same time, I faced some challenges in my career in terms of body injuries, and I always had the passion to keep going, no? And the dedication and the humility to accept the challenges in the moments that the things are not going the way that you expect. So, of course, is a big achievement to be playing at the age of 34. And at the same time, still competitive is something important for me that makes me feel happy and proud about all things that not me, the whole team and family did together.
That Spanish tennis star, Rafael Nadal, speaking in Paris after his 1,000th career win. Finally, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports birthday salute to Hall of Fame basketball player Bill Walton. Walton was born November 5th, 1952, in La Mesa, near San Diego, California. Big Bill is a two-time NBA champion, winning titles in 1977 with the Portland Trailblazers and in 1986 with the Boston Celtics. Walton's son, Luke, is also very involved with basketball. Luke is the head coach of the NBA Sacramento Kings team, and Luke, like his father, also won two NBA titles as a player, winning back-to-back championships in 2009 and 2010 with the Los Angeles Lakers. And that wraps up the November 5th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.